Glad that you're here. As I have done in the past, we have done several different series and sometimes done some series at the same time where we do one week and one the next. And I'm going to get back into the habit of doing that. We started one last week in the book of Galatians. And I want to look this week. And it's kind of ironic that Rex made the comment in Bible class he did, because he said, here we go again talking about David. And I'm going to do a series on David. But this is going to be a series that is really focused on how we can be people after God's own heart. And so looking at David's life in that light and see why he was considered a man after God's own heart and how we can have that in our life as well. So we'll be covering an exhaustive study of all the life of David, but we'll be looking at some highlights of his life in the study. And like I said, we'll probably be doing this like every 3 weeks. And so today's lesson is going to be really focused on chapter 16, that Michael read a portion of that for us this morning. But just a little bit of context here. We see, as was read today, that that David was an unlikely king, and we'll call that the title of this lesson, because this is a time in Israel, and going back before Saul was appointed king. What was going on in the land of Israel? Well, the people wanted to be like the other nations around them, and who is the judge right now? Well, it's Samuel, and Samuel certainly has a role here that's very important during this time. And Samuel is certainly a righteous man, but his sons were not. Samuel had wicked sons, and in verse 3 of chapter 8, it says his sons did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after gain. They took bribes and perverted justice. So, again, something relating back to our Bible study today on greed. Here is an example of that, where Samuel's sons evidently were greedy, and they used their position in that way. They took bribes and perverted justice. Well, it's a good thing today our politics is so pure, and that never happens, right? But people taking bribes, people perverting justice for their own reasons, who does that? But Samuel's sons were doing that, and Samuel is old, and because of the wickedness of his sons, Israel said, we need to do something here. Appoint us a king over us to judge us, because we want to be like all the other nations around us. And so because of that, Saul is chosen to be the king. The scriptures tell us in chapter 9 in verse 2 that there was that Saul was a handsome man, that there was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. And so that's the picture that we have of Saul. Evidently very, very striking, and somebody that would be looked up to literally and figuratively. But we do see throughout the life of Saul, or at least the kingship of Saul, that he falls into a number of sins. And where we see that, kind of being the final straw, is when he is told to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites, and he doesn't do that. He takes the best of the spoil, and he leaves Agag, the king of Amalek, alive, and does not utterly destroy them. And so at that point, Samuel goes to Saul and tells him, because you have not obeyed the voice of the Lord, God has rejected you as king. And so that doesn't happen right away, but then we see what goes on here with the anointing of David. So the kingdom is taken away from Saul. Saul's descendants are not going to sit on the throne. And so that's the background that really leads us here to chapter 16, that Mike read a few verses of that for us this morning. And so the first verse here of the chapter reveals that that Samuel is thinking about, you know, what's going on here. So the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel?" And so interesting here that Samuel is distraught about this situation. That Samuel, reveals that Samuel's grieving over this dynasty being removed from Saul's family. But God is saying to Samuel, "Don't grieve over this. Don't fret over this anymore, because I've got a plan." God had selected Saul for the people. The people wanted a king, and you might want to think about it this way: that God is going to choose differently this time. Here is Saul. How is he described? He's described as someone that, he's the most handsome guy in the land, and he's taller than everybody else, and he's one that, from appearances, he's getting a lot of respect. And that's not the way that we're going to see God looking at this decision on this occasion. So Samuel comes to Bethlehem. And we'll just go ahead and read through this again. He says, "Fill your horn with oil, and I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." So you see that language there. "I've provided for myself a king among his sons." And so this was not going to be the decision of the people. This was the decision of God, who was going to be the leader. "I have done this." And so why is this city important? Well, I think we all know that, right? Why is Bethlehem important? Well, just as Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Samuel is coming to Bethlehem. Jesus would sit on the throne of David. And so Jesse brings his sons to Samuel to offer sacrifices to the Lord. Okay? And so it goes on, and Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice. I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me him who I declare to you." Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him, trembling, and said, "Do you come peaceably?" Isn't that interesting? As Samuel comes, the people are fearful. And why is that? Is it because Samuel is known to be such a mean guy? I don't think that's the case. Because of the wickedness of Saul and the kingdom being removed from him, when a prophet comes to your town under such circumstances, there may be some fear that the condemnation of the Lord is coming. Because here's the prophet of God, who has been the prophet before the kings came into being here, that the condemnation of the Lord may be in the mouth of this prophet. So I find that very interesting here, that as Samuel comes, the people are trembling and say, "Do you come peaceably?" And he says, "Yes, I come peaceably. Peaceably I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." He consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And Samuel consecrates Jesse and his sons to prepare to make sacrifices for the Lord. And once those sacrifices are completed, Samuel is ready to anoint on Jesse's sons, one of Jesse's sons, as the king of Israel. And so Jesse presents his oldest son, Eliab. And notice what is said by Samuel here. Verse 6, "When they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, 'Surely the Lord's anointed is before him.'" So maybe he's looking like Saul. I don't know what Eliab looked like, but he must have been striking in some way. Maybe he was very tall, dark, and handsome and confident looking, or whatever it is that made him appear to Samuel, this has got to be the guy. And so, what do you look for in a leader? Isn't that something that happens today? That if somebody is presentable, if somebody has the gift of gab, and so, you know, they'd be a great politician. You know, they just know how to answer questions, and they've got the look. And just recently in my work, we had a new person that took over a position that had been vacant for a while. And we really needed somebody in that position, and the person that had done it before didn't really do a good job. And so I had really gotten to know this person and their knowledge and what I thought that they could do. And you know, when somebody else met him for the first time, they text me, "Did you see what he was wearing?" And I thought, no, I didn't really think about it. But when I did think about it, now, he was not, didn't look like I look today, you know, with my tie on. And I don't usually wear a tie at work. You know why? Because I'm dealing with commercial printers, you know. Commercial printers don't dress like this. They dress down. And so, you know, if you come in there in a suit, you know, there's automatically, you know, you're not one of them. And so this person that was hired is dealing with commercial printers. I thought, he looks fine for what he's doing. And I told the person that if that is the biggest problem that we have with him, that he dresses a little more casually, I think we're going to be fine. But anyway, it just kind of tells you how much stock we sometimes put into appearance. You know, if I came in here today and I was wearing my Star Wars t-shirt, because I'm going to go see Star Wars this afternoon again and again and again. And so I've got plans this afternoon to go see a movie. I'm wearing my jeans, my Darth Vader shirt. So what's wrong with Randy? He's not dressed the way he usually is. He doesn't look presentable. And we put a lot of stock in appearances. And here you see that. And so here is Samuel. Has he ever met this family before? Apparently not. And here he parades out, and this has got to be the guy. It's all about appearances, or stature, or confidence, or something external here. So he must have looked like a leader that Samuel thought would be followed. But what God said, so do not look on appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And yet, this is another good parallel to our Bible class as we look at issues of the heart. So, God was not interested in having a leader who looked like a leader. God is not going to select here a military warrior, and we certainly see that as we are introduced to David going in and fighting Goliath. Was he the one that people thought would do that? Of course not. Armor wouldn't even fit him. God was going to choose a king for himself and does not look at physical things, is what God tells Samuel. So, you know, back up a little bit and look at Saul. Saul looked like the part. Saul looked like the perfect king in the eyes of the people. He's tall and handsome and strong, and he's the fairest one in the land. And so Saul had failed in obedience to the Lord, and Saul had repeatedly showed more concern for the opinion of the people than the opinion of God. So God looks at the heart, and so certainly that is something that we need to do. Each one of us many times is judged, or we judge by appearance. Now, humans look at these things, and certainly one thing that we're taught in business when you're performing a job interview is that if you're the interviewee, a person makes a judgment based upon your appearance within the first 10 seconds. So if you don't take that seriously, you know, you do yourself a disservice. And you can say, well, people shouldn't judge on that. Well, they do. They do judge on that. And how many times do we make decisions based on what we see rather than the heart. It's a lot easier to see the appearance, isn't it? It's a lot easier to see someone's appearance rather than their heart. How many times have you or me or anybody else decided in the past, well, you know, based on somebody's appearance, well, that's not somebody I'm really interested in getting to know. And maybe they look different. They act a little funny. They talk funny. They're not from around here. They're not from the South. And you know, we've got a salesperson that's from New Jersey, and there's no mistaking that that's where he's from. And he's so loud. He is so and we just back up every time he talks. It's kind of a joke with us. You know, we're all in the same room, Mike. But you know, that's just his demeanor. He's different. And it doesn't always go over well with some people. But after they get to know him and they realize what knowledge he has, they, well, he's a valuable asset. He's somebody that I am glad that I know, even though I have to wear my earplugs when I'm around him. So we make these judgments based on superficial things because we don't think they're the way that they should be or look the way that they should be. But you know, God is saying that is not my character, that is not the way He is going to judge. Think about Jesus. And Jesus looking at the heart. You know, what was Jesus criticized about so many times? Look at who He is around. He's around these people that are sinners. He's going to Samaria. We don't go there. And there's all these external things that there's. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't eat with those people. You shouldn't talk to those people. Tax collectors and sinners. And Jesus said, it's the sick who need the physician, not those who think that they're well. Because He's looking at the heart. Here's Zacchaeus. Nobody else would have given Him the time of day. But Jesus looked at the heart, not the external. And so, how else could Jesus be around the unclean and even around those 10 lepers who desired healing, except that He looked at the heart, not the outward appearance? So the point that is being made here to Samuel is, don't look at the wrong things. God is looking at the heart, and don't make a bad decision because you're looking at the wrong things and looking at the physical things. And so, you know, what a great thing it is when we can do that. And not prejudge in that way. And so, God knows if we're rebellious against Him. God knows if you're all dressed up and looking good, but your heart's not right. Because He knows your heart. So Samuel here continues to look at the sons of Jesse. And you know, it's kind of humorous here as the next one that stands before Samuel is Abinadab. Swipe left. Not Abinadab. And so Jesse has seven sons pass before Samuel. And of course I can't help but think about Cinderella, when you know they've come over to Cinderella's house, and is there anybody else in the house? You know, because Slipper ain't fitting on any of these. Is there anybody else here? And that's what happens here. Shammah comes before Samuel. The Lord did not choose him, and you know the receiving line continues, and none of them are ones God has chosen, and so. Here are the sons of Jesse, and God didn't choose any of them. So Samuel surely thought that Eliab was one. Then Samuel said to Jesse, are all of your sons here? He said, there yet remains the youngest, but behold, he is keeping sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send to get him, for we will not sit down till he comes here. And so, you see the dilemma here. None of these seven are the one. But I do have another one. I have another one. He's not here. He's keeping the sheep. What does that mean when you think about it? He's not the warrior. He's the one that has been given this task that the others are doing more important things, but David is out keeping the sheep. He's not a warrior. He's not prepared for this. You think about the Bush boys out in Texas. You know, they're all in politics and, you know, they're raised in the, you know, David's not one of the Bush boys here. He's not the military leader. He is the youngest. He's out tending the sheep. And while this might have seemed to be a derogatory thing, God uses the imagery of a shepherd to describe his future leaders, including Jesus. And so Samuel instructs Jesse to send for David, because I'm not going to leave. We're not going to leave until David comes. And so let's look at verse 12. Verse 12, and the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him." Let's just back up a little bit. "And he sent and brought him in, and he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. The Lord said, 'Arise, anoint him, for this is he.' Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel rose up and went to Ramah." Now, this description of David is interesting, because, you know, most translations say that David is ruddy. And we don't see that anywhere else except in Genesis 25, you know, where Esau is described in that way. When Esau is born, he's described as red or ruddy. And so, you know, what does that mean, that David was red? Or, you know, some think, well, it means he was fair skinned, that he had red hair, or a lighter complexion. You know, something that was not typical of the, you know, the typical Israelite. And whatever that might be. In any event, I think Michelangelo makes us think that, you know, David was this, you know, fine, you know, specimen of a man and very, very muscular. But David here is described in a more humble way. Whatever it is, he looked different. He was not being held in the same esteem as his older brother, but does say that he had beautiful eyes and was handsome. But, you know, probably just not warrior or king material. So, you know, there's, you know, how is Jesus described? Jesus is described as he has no, you know, form or majesty that we should look upon him, nor appearance that we should be attracted to him. Isaiah chapter 53. So this parallel to Jesus, you know, could be important here. But David is the one. Samuel anoints him. So here's one of the things that's very interesting. How would you feel at this point if you were David? Well, I'd feel more important than my seven brothers. Pass. You all got passed over. And I'm the one that's been out in the field tending sheep. I'm the one that's being anointed king. So what do you do now? I'm not tending sheep anymore. You tell your father that tending sheep is beneath me and I have just received a promotion. And you're lucky that I'm still going to live here with you. Do you demand special privileges? Do you expect your brothers to treat you differently? You know, what changes are going to happen in your life now, knowing that you are anointed king? Do you see David doing anything differently? It doesn't appear so. Saul is being tormented, and And Saul requests for David to come and play music to soothe him. Well, where is David when this happens? Therefore, Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, "Send me David, your son, who is with the sheep." Oh, he's still with the sheep. He's still tending sheep. He has not become an arrogant brat, telling his brothers, I'm going to be king one day, and you know, here's what I'm going to do to you when I am. He's not ordering the family around. This doesn't say that he's out in the field supervising his brothers who are now tending the sheep. Seems like he's just doing the same thing that he's done in the past. And we certainly see that characteristic in Jesus, don't we? When we look at Jesus, who is God in the flesh, time and time again, when we look at the life of Christ, I'm thinking, he could do whatever he wants. He could take control of these situations. He could stop and say, "Don't you know who I am? I don't have to take this." But we see Jesus being the servant and telling others how to be a servant. Jesus could have demanded his disciples, "You wash my feet because I'm the Messiah." David could have bossed his brothers around, but it does not appear that he did. Who are the leaders that usually impress us? It's usually the ones that you say, they just seem like an ordinary, everyday guy. And they've got their door open and they're so willing to talk to anybody. I've got a customer like that. There's three owners and there's one that we really want to deal with. You know, because he's the one that is the friendly one, the one that's reasonable and will talk to you and just it's so pleasant. And when it comes to, you know, respect that he might have in the world, business leaders, he's very rich and wealthy, but does not seem like it at all. He's a leader that really is, you know, super nice and approachable and has not got big-headed about his position. And so when we start looking at the life of David, I think it's real important to start right here. See why he's a man after God's own heart. Because can you see how a lot of people, when they're given that position, given that title, say, "There's great things in store for you." Well, this changes everything. I'm going to dress different. I'm going to work different. I'm going to change my job. And people around me are going to have to pay me some respect. A leader is not someone who grabs that power. "I've been put in charge and you're going to do everything my way." And we see that David, even at a young age here, has some characteristics that are going to help him be a man after God's own heart. Even though he's anointed king, he is going to serve. And so when Saul calls for David to play music to soothe him, David doesn't say, "Well, you know, I don't really have time for that. You know, you're kind of on the way out anyway. I'm the Lord's anointed." He doesn't think that that's beneath him. And, you know, you're a lame duck king. David still serves by playing music for Saul. And think about Jesus and what he did. Jesus continued to serve while he was on the earth, even though he was the Messiah. Mark chapter 10, verse 45 said, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Jesus showed his service by washing the disciples' feet. He showed his service by giving his life on the cross to redeem us from sin. And David viewed himself as a servant of God. The apostles viewed themselves as merely servants, and we see that over and over. And it's admirable when you look at their lives. Because you think about Peter and Paul and James and the others. What a special privilege it was for them to have been chosen. And Paul especially. They were chosen by God. But you don't see them going around bragging about that. They do mention that they were with Jesus. And they speak with authority, but it's not ever from that I'm important, you better listen to me. But they were merely humble servants. And that's how David's life as king really starts out here. You don't see a big change in him. You know, today at 4 o'clock, the clock's ticking now, things are different. No, we need to be people after God's own heart. And it starts off here that God did not look at outward appearance. And while Samuel is there looking at the other guys, saying, oh, it's got to be this one, got to be this one. Nope, it's not any of those. Don't look at outward appearance. God knows the heart. And we see servants of God throughout their life. They continue to serve and are not arrogant in their leadership. So lots of lessons for us, and I look forward to the rest of this study as we look at the things in David's life that made him a man after God's own heart and how we can embody those things in our life. Certainly, part of being humble is knowing that you're wrong and that you need to make a change. And if you have not done that, if you have not given your life to Christ and been buried in baptism, there's no better time to do that. If we can help in any way, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
Will you come? Will you come with your poor broken heart?
Regularly, especially with the study we're doing now, I think it would have been beneficial because of the time. I can see all the positive benefits as well as the faults that we examined in class that we might avoid. Is there anything we need to announce? If not, then we'll be led in our closing prayer, and Lord willing, we'll be going again this Wednesday, Lord willing.
Our loving Father in heaven, we come to you now with thankful hearts, hearts of praise. We thank you above all else for your love for us. You loved us so much you sent your only Son here to die. What can only be described as a horrible, horrible death. And let us never forget that you had to sit there in heaven on your throne and watch the whole thing happen. What a sacrifice. We owe you so much, dear God. Help us to remember it when we're tempted to sin. We thank you for all the good things of this life you bring our way. We thank you for this church and the precious saints that worship here. May we always love each other the way we do. Be with us now as we go out into the world. We know we'll be tempted. The devil is unrelenting. He never gives up. Be with us, guide us, and direct us, and bring us back here at the next appointed time. We pray this prayer in your precious Son's name. Amen.